even if we'd done something last year, by the time we got into production, the market would be saturated at that point anyway.
True, but...
So there's no window of opportunity this year, it didn't exist last year, to get into the market ahead of anyone else. You're just hitting the market at its peak.
You'll probably, if even if you got in now, you hit it on the downside. But then you can get into, like, there's a real shortage of good managers. Then you get down to, like, the level of the farm. How efficient is the guy in the farm? How good is he at growing the fish? How good is he at marketing the fish? And so, ultimately, somebody's going to be making money at it, or nobody will stay into it.
So, actually, a good competitor could go into that business at any particular time to be faced with the same conditions that they would be faced with if they started last year.
Right, right. I mean, nobody, the guys who are creaming the market are the guys right now, the guys who are farming Atlantic salmon and Puget salmon. Their production costs are $2, and they're getting $5 a pound for the fish, so their net profit is $3 a pound. And it'll never be left that good again, basically.
But the thing is, they're establishing markets.
It's not hard right now. You know, it's a short market. Depends on who you want to sell to. It doesn't take a whole lot of work. Because people are contacting you, they're just kind of fighting. Their problem is finding fish to supply the demand right now. But that could, that will change unless something, you know, there's a real radical change in the equation.
Assuming that our costs in Alaska, after the, if the industry were to start and it's developed, are approximately the same, it's obvious. Just like you showed the difference between the imports to France and the imports to the United States with Norwegian salmon because of the freight costs, wouldn't that be? We have an established U.S. market here that we can see on that chart. Wouldn't it seem logical that...
Alaska would have an advantage?
Well, yeah, they're the...
Well, David will go into this...
Or other United States markets or Canada markets.
Yeah, David will go into this a little bit. The problem is that south of Alaska, you have British Columbia, which is just, pretty much, you know, there are a lot of salmon in the water now, and they do have lower production costs. But I've taken up all the time. Not all, but...
Sorry.
Are there any other questions? Or?
Good information. Is this report, are you just publishing it, or is it in handout form yet?
We have passed it out to all the committee members. We brought additional copies since it didn't seem like it had gotten
we get ours.
Folders, but we have other copies available. Next person we have up is David Egan from the DPA group who did the cost of production study.
Is there a line graph that shows where the natural salmon is right now and where they're going up with it? And then where are the...
Farm
salmon. Where do they cross that?
Do you have that, David?
You mean where they're going? You mean exports or
total production?
Total production.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting.
Are you going to use this?
Yeah.
Do you understand the question?
Yeah, I do. No, I don't have that.
When will domestic raised salmon in the marketplace?
This doesn't really show it. This shows like the production forecast for farm salmon is hitting, say by 1995, 250,000 tons. I would say they would, if you just take U.S. production of wild Pacific salmon, they'll, and if you take U.S. production of wild Pacific salmon versus world production of farm salmon, they'll cross in about 1990.
And from 2 years from now.
2 years from now. From that point on, the total production of farm salmon will be greater than the U.S. production of Pacific salmon.
And we're wild. Producing how much of wild salmon stocks worldwide? Now, what was your figure?
I'd have to go back. You produce about half, 50%. Russia and Japan are the other two. Russia, okay. Canada.
Where do you suppose that market's going to go, basically? Will it basically go to Japan, and will it basically... be in the Japan market, right?
You
for the Pacific?
Sockeye will always go to Japan, pretty much, because I don't think anybody else is willing to pay the amount of money that the Japanese pay for sockeye. The pink salmon is a totally different market animal. It goes in the can, it goes into frozen and very low end market that farm salmon would never compete with. They can never get the production costs down that low. Where you will see the production, where you will see the competition, then you get a little more is in the troll cod, which basically is high quality versus high quality. And then there are trade-offs involved. There's the fact that high quality troll salmon, most of it's frozen. So then you have the trade-off of fresh versus frozen, wild versus farmed. But, and then you can throw in the international currency situation. If the dollar gets strong again, then you can bet the prices are going to come down like they did about 3 years ago.
Why aren't these people also going into frozen fish?
Pardon?
Aren't these people also freezing salmon?
Well, they froze a lot of cohos in Chile this year because the Japanese paid them an extra dime to freeze them, and they didn't have to pay $1 a pound air freight. They only had to pay 20 cents a pound ocean freight. So they'll freeze them.
It's conceivable that they will have to go into frozen production also if the market reaches the point where to get rid of the fish.
They'll definitely have to go into frozen production. And what you'll see a lot of will be frozen portions because the labor costs in Chile are so low.
So they'll be ready for serving individual portions.
The kind of stuff that you can't buy in the store right now.
Yeah.
I don't want to eat.
Okay. Next. Now that we pass these bills out, this should be up in finance, probably where everything goes and dies or gets resurrected or something.
We'll have to see what happens when they come back, huh?
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
I'm David Egan from the DPA Group. DPA is a national management consulting firm in Canada, and we were recently ranked as the 10th largest management consulting firm in Canada. We have 7 offices across the country, and in Vancouver, we specialize in the fishery sector. We do work in the wild fishery, in the sports fishery, the native fishery, and recently we've been quite active in the aquaculture industry. The purpose of this study is to develop estimates of cost of production for Alaska, for net pen rearing in Alaska, and to compare those to cost of production in the major supply regions. These include Norway, Scotland, Chile, British Columbia, and Japan. To assist DPA in this study, we subcontracted Tom Jorndal, who's a visiting professor at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver. He's from the Norwegian Institute of Business Administration and Economics, and he's one of the leading economists studying aquaculture in Norway. He's recently written a book on the economics of aquaculture in Norway. To look at the potential for net pen rearing of salmon in Alaska from a biological standpoint, we subcontracted Hatfield Consultants, the environmental consulting firm in Vancouver, who have been very active in both the BC and Chilean salmon farming industries. I'll quickly show you some overheads. The first one summarizes cost of production. Between the 5 major supply regions. The bottom line shows it on a unit cost per pound basis. This is a dress weight fish. Everything's assumed to be head-on eviscerated. As you can see, Chile has the lowest production cost. BC is second, followed by Norway.
10 cents an hour?
One thing you should be aware of is that the sizes vary quite a bit. Norway has the largest size fish, followed by BC and Scotland. Well, I've got Chile at 2.5 kilos, so they're about the same. Japan has the smallest size because their production cycle is the shortest.
Because of water temperatures?
Well, that's right. They have lethal summer water temperatures, so they can't hold the fish over more than a year. Although they grow fast while they're in the water. Now, to explain a little bit how we got at growth curves for net pen rearing of salmon in Alaska, we studied a lot of environmental studies, or previous studies, which described water temperature profiles, winter ice covering, salinity, and the presence of algae blooms throughout several areas in southeast and south central Alaska. Maybe I can even just point out to you generally where we looked. I've got a map over here in my chart. Most of the areas that we looked at are in southeast. This chart unfortunately cuts off some of it. I'll just read to you some of the areas that we looked at. And we also have very good data from the experimental program projects at Little Fort Walter and Auk Bay. And we were able to compare these to some public rootstock programs in BC that had temperature profiles and feed conversion ratios and salinities all quite well described. So we looked at areas which included Clarence Strait, Sumner Strait, Frederick Sound, Chatham Strait, and Stevens Passage in southeast. We also looked at a number of areas in Prince William Sound, particularly around Valdez. We did look at Cook Inlet, but unfortunately there's winter ice covering there, which effectively would limit any net pen rearing of salmon there.
What about the chain? The Aleutian chain?
No, that was outside the scope of our study.
I see.
As it turns out, we've since discovered that there's actually quite good water there. So there is probably, from a biological standpoint, there's probably as good or better potential than the Ketchikan area, which this warm winter, warm water scenario describes. So what we did is we developed these growth patterns for about four scenarios. And here you're seeing the best case, worst case scenario. And there's quite a bit known about the relationship between growth and temperature with Chinook. And this is really adapting what's known about that relationship. So we've got a daily growth rate factor and a food conversion factor the daily growth factor is calculated from the temperature and a food conversion rate, which is tied into a salinity level as well. So you can see that after 24 months in salt water, fish will reach about 2.5 kilos or over 5 pounds. 4 pounds is a good harvestable weight. So that, in fact, within 2 years in salt water, you could get harvestable fish out of the Ketchikan area. So from that best case scenario, we developed unit costs of production for Alaska. And it turns out at about $4.50 a pound or $4.50 a kilo or $2.40 a pound in US dollars. Feed is the largest operating cost.
Yeah, 170.
Finally, what we did then was we took all the cost of production, added it in from each region, added in selling costs and freight costs to three major markets, Los Angeles, New York, and Tokyo. And as you can see, Alaska ends up being fairly competitive in all markets. Although BC and Chile generally are more competitive. The exception, I suppose, is Japan currently, where Alaska is more competitive than Chile. Just a few words of caution about these estimates. The costs of production currently are only well understood for Norway, because in Chile and British Columbia, for example, there have not been any industry-wide cost of production surveys. And even if they had been done, I don't think they'd really reflect the future costs of production in those industries because there's just been so much expansion in recent years. Alaska would be selling farm salmon in smaller sizes than Norway, Scotland, and British Columbia, and would compete more directly with Chile. Both Chile and British Columbia have cost advantages over Alaska in Los Angeles and New York.
Say that again. Who does?
British Columbia and Chile have cost advantages
okay.
over Alaska in LA and New York. Alaska would also likely have a short window of period in which to sell. This would also likely result in more direct competition with the Chileans. Finally, landed costs in major markets are sensitive to exchange rates. Fluctuating exchange rates could make Alaskan farmed salmon more or less competitive in all markets. However, the U.S. and Canadian currencies are closely linked and generally shift from each other only slowly. As a result, British Columbia would likely have cost advantages over Alaska in all major markets. That concludes my
conversation. Yeah. Yeah, we have we're running into S time, and how much?
5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 minutes. Let's go until Fisher comes in and kicks us out. They didn't show up here until 20 minutes to two anyway. So
be here today. You get 7 bills in the calendar.
All right, start your watch. You checked the one part of this project was to look at the degree of competition in the marketplace between farms and agricultural salmon. Just characterizing the salmon market right here in a second. Basically, products in the salmon market differ by species, fish size, quality, whether fish is frozen or not. The market is segmented by different uses, restaurant versus retail, and differs by regional demographic factors, knowledge of the fish. The market's dynamic these days, much more dynamic than probably has been in the past, with new suppliers coming online, new processors and wholesalers coming online, and new buyers, restaurant buyers, retail buyers who weren't salmon buyers before. The market's international, and market information is relatively expensive and not particularly accurate.
Never will be.
Well, it's more accurate in agricultural commodities, you know, relatively speaking. So basically, the goals were to try to determine the magnitude of the market, price versus attribute trade-offs, where attributes are species and farm versus wild, things like that. Suggest maybe some product design, marketing strategies, possible market growth, and target markets. I'm going to skip a bunch of things. Let me just... The market was modeled as a two-stage process. In other words, first the decision maker, buyer, decides which salmon product he wants to buy. Do I want to buy Troll Caught Kings? Or do I want to buy Norwegian Farm? That's his first decision. And then the second decision is how much do I buy from my firm? I'll address the first question. In other words, the decision of how they decide what's in...
Do you have a chart showing the percentage of the marketplace known today between the limited size, like the restaurant, the farm product size? Do you have a percentage as to where that is going?
I don't have a chart with me, but it's in the report in terms of estimates of one, regional geographic estimates of where product is sold, restaurant market, and which, how it flows. You have the flow of the restaurant versus fish stores versus supermarkets. Basically, the preference, the attributes we considered were species, area of origin or country of origin, farm versus wild, fresh, frozen, quality, product form being cut or whole, size of the fish, color, availability, that's year-round versus seasonal, a lot size and price. Skipping the importance here of these various things, importance of the attribute ratings. Japanese traders versus Pacific Northwest versus Northeast. You can see that the Japanese species is much more important than the Northeast is much less important. Quality is typically the most important factor. Fresh, frozen, whether it's fresh or frozen, highly important. And the price is important. I spent a little more time with this before, but if I only have 5 minutes.
I understand. I apologize for...
And we have a bunch of charts. Then once you have an idea of some of the characteristics of the relative weightings of the general product attributes, we looked at the details within those attributes. In other words, the species we considered were the five species, Atlantic King, Chum, hey. Silver, and Red.
He's got 7 bills.
Well, all of these graphs are in the report, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, because it's obviously too important work not to spend some time on it. Yeah, apparently it's in that report.
No, it's all in there.
It's in the report. Well, apparently they've been sent to our offices. They must have just come.
Come on.
I don't know. Yeah, we can find out.
I'm sorry that we had that. Thanks for having us.